You're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. Welcome to today's reading of the Council Bluff Daily Nonpareil for April 26, 2024. I'm Ty Cullison from Drake University. Here is your first story. Justices seem skeptical of a Trump immunity claim. Former president may still get delay if case is sent back to lower courts. Washington, the Supreme Court appeared likely Thursday to reject former President Donald Trump's claim of absolute immunity from prosecution over election interference, but several justices signaled reservations about the charges that could cause a lengthy delay possible beyond November's election. A majority of justices did not appear to embrace the claim of absolute immunity that would stop special counsel Jack Smith's prosecution of Trump on charges that he conspired to overturn his 2020 election loss to Democrat Joe Biden. But in arguments lasting more than 2.5 hours in the court's first consideration of criminal charges against the former president, several conservative justices indicted they could limit when former presidents might be prosecuted, suggesting that the case might have to be sent back to lower courts before a trial could begin. The timing of the Supreme Court's decision could be as important as the outcome. Trump, the presumptive 2024 Republican presidential nominee, pushed to delay the trial until after the election, and the later the justices issued their decision, the more likely he is to succeed. If Trump regains the presidency, he could order the Justice Department to dismiss the case or possibly, as two justices suggested, pardon himself if convicted. Since conservatives on the court gained a supermajority with the confirmation of the three Trump appointees, they cast aside a decades-long precedent on abortion and affirmative action. Now Trump is asking them to rule that one of the fundamental tenets of the American system of government, that no person is above the law, should be rejected as well, at least as it applies to him. The active questioning from all nine justices left the strong impression that the court was not headed for a sure and speedy consensus decision that would allow the trial to begin quickly. Justices Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh, two of Trump's three high court appointees, and Justice Samuel Alito said their concern was not the case against Trump, but rather the effects of their ruling on future presidencies. Each time Justice Department lawmaker Michael Dreeben sought to focus on Trump's actions, these justices jumped in. This case has huge implications for the presidency, for the future of the presidency, for the future of the country, Kavanaugh said. This court is writing a decision for the ages, Gorsuch said. Justice Amy Coney Barrett, the other Trump appointee, seemed less open to arguments advanced by Trump's lawyer John D. Sawyer, searching for the way a trial could take place. Smith's team wants a speedy resolution. The court typically issues its last opinions by the end of June, about 4 months before the election. U.S. Department Judge Tiana Chapuk, who would preside over the trial, said partial issue could take up 3 months. Hamas official offers unlikely truce deal in war with Israel. Al-Haya group would lay down arms if independent Palestinian state established. Istanbul, a top Hamas political official told the Associated Press of Islamic militant group is willing to agree to a truce of 5 years or more with Israel and that it would lay down its weapons and convert into a political party if an independent Palestinian state is established along pre-1967 borders. The comments by Khalal al-Haya in an interview Wednesday came amid a stalemate in months of talks for a ceasefire in Gaza. The suggestion that Hamas would disarm appeared to be a significant concession by the militant group official committed to Israel destruction. But it's unlikely that Israel would consider such a scenario. It has vowed to crush Hamas following the deadly October 7th attack that triggered the war, and its current leadership is adamantly opposed to the correction of the Palestinian state on lands that Israel captured during 1967 Mideast War. Al-Haya, a high-ranking Hamas official who was represented the Palestinian militant in negotiations for a ceasefire and hostage exchange, struck a sometimes defiant and other times. Philanthropy boosts Maui welfare recovery. Photo on the page being from 2023, provided by Amy Chadwick, that shows her home or where it used to stand. It's now kind of like what looks like a construction area. Everything's decimated and there's a lot of debris everywhere. There are also two photos next to it, one of Dwayne The Rock Johnson and another of Oprah Winfrey. Winfrey Johnson set up People's Fund that raises almost $60 million. Lena Vera misses the swing set on her Lahaina home, which was reduced to ashes in the wildfires that swept it through her community last summer. Multiple generations went through there playing in my front yard, she said, just with the animals and the turtles and the deer and goats that we once had in the tiny little yard. A grandmother of four and a mother of five, Vera had lived in that home on the corner lot since 1991. She and 10 family members, including a baby younger than one, were displaced in the deadliest U.S. wildfires in more than a century. In the weeks that followed, she and her adult children applied for and received many kinds of assistance, including from the People's Fund in Maui and incentives set by Oprah Winfrey and Dwayne Johnson. All of them except one adult son had received 6 monthly payments of $1,200 directly into their bank accounts from the People's Fund. Vera credits the payments with helping them stay current on their mortgage, which they had to pay even though the house was destroyed. When she learned she would receive the direct payments, she said, "That was in the back of my head, that if I had to use it, I had it, and it would have probably saved my house." When Winfrey and Johnson launched the People's Fund for Maui, which benefited people who lost their homes in the wildfires, they committed $10 million and asked others to join them. At the time, the request was met with some criticism, given especially Winfrey's wealth and extensive estate in Maui. In the end, the Entertainment Industry Foundation, a longtime nonprofit that helped celebrities administer charitable work that managed the distribution of the funds, said it raised almost $60 million. That money was dispersed between September and February to some 8,100 adults, a significant portion of the 12,000 people in the state of Hawaii displaced. The foundation wouldn't say exactly how much Winfrey and Johnson gave in total, but a list of other contributors incited the bulk came from them. EIF said more than 20,000 individuals and companies donated to the fund. In September, Winfrey posted a video on social media thanking her supporters, saying, "Your generosity, I guarantee you, is going to touch the lives of many families." Over many years, the disaster response community has grown a trust direct cash transfers like these as a useful tool, said Shani DeCoy, a professor at the Bloomberg School of Public Health at Johns Hopkins University. Despite initial fears of misuse, she said research has shown cash transfers overwhelmingly benefit the intended recipients who spend it on essentials and like housing and food. Generally, there's the idea that cash provides dignity and choice, that it's a more cost-effective use of assistance, said DeCoy. Because not every household has the exact same needs, the households know their needs better than outside organizations. Many nonprofits and government programs now use direct cash transfers, including others in Maui, following disasters. Vera's family has tried to save all the money they've received, including from a GoFundMe that family members set up. Direct gifts strangers sent to her daughter's Venmo account, and a gift from a fundraiser Fox News host, Will Kane, started. They will need that money and more to rebuild through. Those plans are still very distant. She said they are extremely grateful to everyone who donated for the mutual aid efforts that were set up immediately after the fires. Those local efforts were how most people received assistance in the first few weeks after the fire, said Maui-based attorney Lance Collins, who is representing some survivors. People felt that in general there were a tremendous outpouring of generosity by individuals and community groups. And I think that Oprah and The Rock fell into that category, he said. Most of Vera's family has been staying in hotels. An initial boon to the disaster response in community where demand for housing was already extremely high before 12,000 people lost their homes in the fires. However, uncertainty and issues with mental health have been growing among those staying in hotels, according to nonprofits working with them, said Lauren Nashim, senior vice president of the Maui recovery efforts at the Hawaii Community Foundation. In January, state and county governments along with the foundation and the Federal Emergency Management Agency announced a $500 million commitment to build 3,000 housing units that would offer displaced people shelter for at least 18 months. The foundation committed $50 million to the effort, its single largest grant from its Maui Strong Fund, which it opened immediately after the wildfires. In total, the fund raised $189 million from more than 250,000 people all over the world. The foundation followed a disaster response plan it crafted in 2019 in anticipation of a possible catastrophic event. It has paid out $89 million in grants so far, purposefully distracting the majority of its support towards recovery and stabilization efforts, which will extend over months and years. This is the work that direct cash transfers won't address, including providing services, strengthening social support systems, and rebuilding with the next potential disaster in mind. Kamahi Bermel, who leads fundraising at Seabury Hall, a private school in Maui, was invited to offer some thoughts about the design of the People's Fund in Maui. She suggested that the fund make every adult who is displaced eligible for direct cash transfers instead of just every household. Bramel said what she saw of Winfrey and Johnson's approach made her feel that they were appreciating this gift with the spirit of the Hawaiian word kahai, and it means to give lavishly with no expectation of getting anything in return. Trump from A1. The court has moved quickly in prior cases involving presidential power, deciding the Watergate tapes case against President Richard Nixon just 16 days after arguments. This year, it took the justices less than a month to rule unanimously that states couldn't kick Trump off the ballot. Trump, the first former president charged with crimes, has said he wanted to be at the Supreme Court on Thursday. Instead, he was in a courtroom in New York where he stands trial on charges that he falsified business records to keep damaging information from voters when he directed hush money payments to a former porn star to keep quiet her claims that they had a sexual encounter. Sawyer argued that former presidents are entitled to absolute immunity for their official acts. Otherwise, he said, politically motivated prosecutions of former occupants of the Oval Office would become routine and presidents couldn't function as the commander-in-chief if they had to worry about criminal charges. Lower courts rejected these arguments, including a unanimous three-judge panel on the appeals court in Washington, D.C. Several justices drilled down trying to come up with a definition of what considered an official act, on whether charges based on one should be thrown out. Justice Elena Kagan wondered whether a former president could escape prosecution even if he ordered a coup or sold nuclear secrets. Sawyer said prosecutions may not be allowed if those were determined to be official acts. That sure sounds bad, doesn't it? Kagan asked. Chief Justice John Roberts conjured up a president being indicted for receiving a bribe in exchange for an administrative appointment. How could indictment go forward if prosecutors had to remove the official act, the appointment? The election interference conspiracy case brought by Smith in Washington is just one of four criminal cases confronting Trump. Smith's team says the men who wrote the Constitution never intended for presidents to be above the law, and that in any event, the acts Trump is charged with, including participating in a scheme to enlist fake electors in battleground states won by Biden, aren't in any way a part of these presidents' official duties. Almost 4 years ago, all nine justices rejected Trump's claim of absolute immunity from the district attorney Tsuponna for his financial records. That case played out during Trump's presidency and involved a criminal investigation, but no charges. Nation and World. Harvey Weinstrom. Court tosses conviction. Convicted rapist will remain in prison for Los Angeles sentence. New York's highest court on Thursday threw out Harvey Weinstrom's 2020 rape conviction with a ruling that shocked and disappointed women who celebrated historic gains during the Me Too move, who celebrated historic gains during the hashtag MeToo era. The court found the trial judge unfairly allowed testimony against the ex-movie mogul based on allegations that weren't part of the case. Wingstrom, 72, will remain in prison because he was convicted in Los Angeles in 2022 for another rape. But the New York ruling reopens a painful chapter in America's reckoning with sexual misconduct by powerful figures, an era that began in 2017 with a flood of allegations against Wingstrom. While Thursday's ruling was a blow to hashtag MeToo advocates, they noted it was based on legal technicalities and not an exoneration of Wingstrom's behavior, saying the original trial irrevocably moved the cultural needle on attributes about sexual assault. The Manhattan District Attorney's Office said it intends to retry Wingstrom, and at least one of his successors said she would testify again. Accusers said she would testify again. The State Court of Appeals overturned Wingstrom's 23-year-old sentence in a 4-3 decision, saying the trial court enormously admitted testimony of uncharged alleged prior sexual acts. And a distant judge, Madeline Sanks, wrote a court of appeals was continuing a disturbing trend of overturning justices' guilty verdicts in cases involving sexual violence. She said the ruling came at the expense and safety of women. The reversal of Winston's conviction in the second major hashtag MeToo setback in the last 2 years, the U.S. Supreme Court refused to hear an appeal of a Pennsylvania court decision to throw out Bill Cosby's sexual assault conviction. Winston has begun in New York prison since his conviction for forcibly performing oral sex on a TV and film production assistant in 2006 and rape in the third degree for an attack on an aspiring actress in 2013. He was sentenced to 16 years in prison in the Los Angeles case. Wingstrom's lawyers expect Thursday's court ruling to have a major impact on the appeal of his Los Angeles rape conviction. Their arguments are due May 20th. Wingstrom's conviction in 2020 was heralded by advocates and by activists and advocates as a milestone achievement, but dissected just as quickly by his lawyers and later the Court of Appeals when it heard arguments on the matter in February. Dozens of women came forward to accuse Weinstein, including famous actors such as Ashley Judd and Uma Thurman. Trump hush money criminal trial. There is a large photo with many men blurred in the background, and in the foreground is Donald Trump. Ex-publisher describes scheme. Former Inquirer chief shielded his friends from damaging stories. As Donald Trump ran for president in 2016, his old friend at the National Inquirer scooped up potentially damaging stories about the candidate and paid out tens of thousands of dollars to keep them from the public eye. But when it came to the seamy claims by porn performer Stormy Daniels, David Pecker, and tabloid's longtime publisher said he put his foot down. "I'm not paying for this story," he told jurors Thursday at Trump's hush money trial, reconnecting his version of a conversation with Trump's former lawyer Michael Cohen about the catch and kill scheme that prosecutors allege amounted to interference in the race. Pecker was already $180,000 in the hole on other Trump-related stories by the time Daniels came along, at which point he said, "I didn't want to be involved in this." Pecker's testimony was a critical building block for the president's theory that their partnership was a way to illegally influence the 2016 presidential election. Trump's lawyers also began their cross-examination of Pecker, using the time to question his memory of years-old events and suggest his account had been involved over time. Trump maintains his innocence and says the stories that were brought in sequence were false. Pecker testified how he and his publication paralleled rumor mongering into splashy theories that smeared Trump's opponents, and just as critically leveraged his connections and suppressed unflattering coverage. He recalled that the publication brought a sordid tale from a New York doorman and purchased accusations of an extramarital affair with former Playboy model Karen McDougal, and prevent the claims from getting out. There was some talk of reimbursement from Trump's orbit, but Pecker was ultimately never paid. The breaking point came with Daniels, who was eventually paid by Cohen to keep quiet over her claim of the 2006 sexual encounter with Trump. Pecker advised that someone should do something to prevent the story from going public. I said to Michael, my suggestion to you is that you should buy the story and you should take it off the market, because if you don't and it gets out, I believe the boss will be very angry with you. Surge in imports drives economic growth down. High cost pressure consumers who still continued spending. The nation's economy slowed sharply last quarter to a 1.6% annual pace in the face of high interest rates, but consumers, the main driver of economic growth, kept spending at a solid pace. Thursday's reports from the Commerce Department said the gross domestic product, the economy's total output of goods and services, declared in January-March quarter from its brisk 3.4 growth rate in the final 3 months of 2023. A surge in imports, which are subtracted from GDP, reduced first quarter growth by nearly 1% point. Growth was also held back by businesses reducing their investors. Both those categories that tend to fluctuate sharply from quarter to quarter. The economy, though, is still creating price pressures, a continuing source of concern for the Federal Reserve. A measure of inflation accelerated to a 3.4% annual rate from January through March, up from 1.8% in the last 3 months of 2023, and the biggest increase in the year. Excluding volatile food and energy prices, a so-called core inflation rose up to 3.7% rate, up from 2% in the fourth quarter of 2023. Some schools call police to stop demonstrations. University of Southern California cancels big graduation ceremony. The University of Southern California canceled its main graduation ceremony, and dozens more college students were arrested at the other campuses nationwide Thursday as protests against the Israel-Palestinian war spread. College officials across the U.S. are worried protests could disrupt plans for commencement ceremonies. Some universities called in police to break up demonstrations, resulting in scuffles and hundreds of arrests, while others appeared content to wait out protests as the semester ticks down. Some schools, such as Columbia University in New York and California State Polytechnic University Humboldt, tried to negotiate a solution with protesters. Other universities are rewriting their rules to ban excompetence of moving final exams to new locations. Excompetence. And protests continue to spring up Thursday. Students protesting the war demand schools cut financial ties to Israel and divest from companies establishing the conflict. Some Jewish students say the protest veered into anti-Semitism, but made them afraid to step foot on campus. Moving on to Digest. Reservist testifies on Maine mass shooter. Maine, an Army reservist and a friend of the gunman behind Maine's deadliest mass shooting, testified Thursday on his friend's mental decline, describing publicly for the first time the warning he ensued a month before the killings. Sean Hungston texted leaders of his reserve unit 6 weeks before the October 25th shooting left 18 people dead and 13 wounded, telling them to change the passcode to the gate at their Army Reserve training facility and arm themselves if Robert Chad showed up. Hongson told superiors on September 15th, I believe he is going to snap and do a mass shooting. Several other reservists witnessed cards deterioration, leading to his 2-week hospitalization in July. And relatives warned police that were concerned about his access to guns. Card 40 was found dead of a self-inflicted gunshot wound after the shooting's authorities failure to remove his weapons is the subject of the investigation. Commission in the state, which also passed new gun safety laws. FCC votes to restore net neutrality rules. The Federal Communications Commission restored net neutrality rules Thursday that prevent broadband invest providers from favoring some sites and apps over others. The more effectively restrains the net neutrality order the commission first issued in 2015 during the Obama administration. The FCC repealed it in 2017 under then President Donald Trump. The telecommunications industry opposed the reintroduction of these rules, declaring them unnecessary government interference in business decretions. Net neutrality is presumable that provides the internet service should treat all traffic equally. The rules ban practice that throttle or block certain sites or apps, or that offer higher speeds to customers who pay extra. The measure passed on a 3-2 vote, with Democratic commissions in favor of Republicans opposed. Briefly, air pollution. U.S. coal-fired power plants would be forced to capture smokestack emissions or shut down under a rule of Environmental Protection Agency issued Thursday. Abortion. Republican Attorney General from 17 states filed a lawsuit Thursday challenging a new federal rule enlisting workers a time off or other accommodations for abortions, calling the rule an illegal interference with the 2022 federal law. Ukraine war. Ukraine sidelined U.S. provided Abrams battle tanks in part because Russian drone warfare made it too difficult for them to operate without detection or coming under attack. Two U.S. military officials said Thursday 5 of the 31 tanks were already lost. Gaza. A senior U.S. military official told reporters Thursday the U.S. is on track to begin delivering more food and other humanitarian aid into Gaza Strip by early May using a new port and pier that are under construction as Israel's war on Hamas militants grind on. Baltimore. The first cargo ship passed through the newly opened deep water channel Thursday in Baltimore after being stuck in the harbor since the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapsed 4 weeks ago. Space race. China launched a 3-member crew to its orbiting space station Thursday, part of its ambitious program that aims to put astronauts on the moon by 2030. You're listening to the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for April 26th, Friday, 2024, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Disabled in Des Moines. I'm Ty Collison from Drake University. IRIS volunteers love to hear from listeners. If you have any comments or questions about this or any IRIS program, please call toll-free from anywhere in Iowa at 515-243-6833. Now moving on to sports. Williams to Bears starts the QB parade. There are two photos, one of Daniels and one of Maya. Daniels, Maya, follow six quarterbacks, go to top 12. Detroit. Caleb Williams swiftly walked on stage, looked out, and screamed, "Woo yeah!" Long-suffering Bears fans felt his joy. Williams is heading to the Windy City, aiming to become the franchise quarterback Chicago has sought for decades. The 2022 Heisman Trophy winner kicked off an historic NFL draft Thursday night that had five other teams selecting quarterbacks among the top 12 picks, setting a record with five in the top 10 trying to record for the most in the first round. Nearly the entire first half of the draft was offensive players. A defensive player wasn't selected until UCLA edge runner Laronto Loto went at number 15 in Indianapolis. That's the latest a first defensive player has ever gone. The Bears opened with an easy choice, taking Williams at number 1 after deciding weeks ago to bank on 2022 Heisman Trophy winner from USC. Care, love, and support, and want to win, Williams said about what he's bringing to Chicago. The Washington Commanders followed up by taking 2023 Heisman Trophy winner Jaden Daniels from LSU. And the New England Patriots took North Carolina's Drake Maia at number three, making it the fourth draft the quarterbacks going with the first three picks. It matched 2021 Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance. In 1971, Jim Punkett, Archie Manning, Dan Pastore, and 1999, Tim Crouch, Donovan McNabb, Aki Smith. At number eight, the Atlanta Falcons made a stunning decision to choose Washington quarterback Michael Penix Jr., despite signing Kirk Cousins to the massive contract in a free agency. The Minnesota Vikings traded up one spot and took J.J. McCarthy, who led Michigan to a national championship, to make it five quarterbacks in the top 15 for the first time. The Denver Broncos chose Oregon's Bo Nix with 12th pick, trying the 1983 draft with six QBs in the first round. Three of those became Hall of Famers: John Elway, Don Marino, and Jim Kelly. Todd Blackledge, Tony Ensign, and Ken O'Brien also went on to the first round in 1983. The Arizona Cardinals snapped the early QB trend, choosing Ohio State receiver Martin Harrison Jr. With a fourth pick, the Los Angeles Chargers opened the Jim Hartsburg era by taking Notre Dame offensive tackle Joe Alt instead of giving Justin Herbert a number one wide receiver to replace Keenan Allen and Mike Williams. The New York Giants then snatched up LSU receiver Malik Nabers at number six, and Tennessee Titans took Alabama offensive tackle J.C. Lathrum with the seventh pick, and the Bears selected Washington ride Rome Kapobenses at number nine. The New York Jets, who dropped to number 11, chose offensive tackle Olufrenashu, giving Aaron Rodgers more protection. The Las Vegas Raiders got Georgia tight end Brock Bowers at number 13. The New Orleans Saints took Oregon State offensive tackle Talasi Forgua with a 14th pick before the Colts grabbed Latu. Previously, the latest defensive player was selected was number eight. Latu started a short trend. The Seattle Seahawks took Texas defensive tackle Brian Murphy next, and the Vikings made another trade to move up and to take Alabama edge Dallas Turner at number 17. Rap icon Eminem walked on stage at the Lions in a Lions sweatshirt and cap shortly after God Will to start the festivities. The Motor City native riled up the fans before turning it over to the Lions stars Goff, Adam Hodgson, Amon-Ra St. Brown, and Hall of Famer Barry Sanders and Calvin Johnson. St. Brown led them in chanting Jared Goff, and Johnson kept it short, "What up, doe?" An estimated crowd of 150,000, many wearing their Honolulu Blue Lions jerseys, filled the states surrounding the draft theater and it turned the NFL's biggest offseason event into a giant party. Williams is the third quarterback Chicago has selected in the first round in the past 8 years. Mitch Trubisky, the number two overall pick in 2017, lasted four seasons. Justin Fields, the 11th pick in 2021, was traded away for the conditional sixth-round pick after three sessions. Williams was the clear front runner in a quarterback-rich draft. The Bears didn't meet any other QBs, and Williams didn't visit any other teams. He impressed the future team over dinner with several Bears players last month, showing them he's more substance than Hollywood style. The Bears are the only NFL franchise that hasn't had a quarterback throw for 4,000 yards or 30 touchdowns in a season. They passed up Bryce Young and CJ Stroud last year, and it traded the number one pick to Carolina in a blockbuster deal, only to get to the top choice this year after the Panthers went 2-15. The 23-year-old Daniels, who played three seasons at Arizona State and two at LSU, gives the Commanders a potential franchise QB after leading the nation in a total offensive last season with 4,946 yards. A do-it-all player, Daniels ranked fifth with 3,812 yards passed with 40 touchdowns. MLB, France, Eurus, HR's Lyft, Mariners. Texas Tri France and Luis Arfers hit two-run homers. Luis Castillo pitched six solid innings, and the Seattle Mariners beat the Texas Rangers 4-3 on Thursday, taking two of the three in the series and leaving with the first place in AL West. Julio Rodriguez leading off after shortstop J.P. Crawford went on an injured list with a right oblique strain, opened with a single and scored on France's first homer of the section. Brewers 7, Patriots 5. Gary Sanchez hit a pinch-hit two-home run in the eighth inning to lift Milwaukee to the road victory over Pittsburgh and a series split. Sanchez drove a 0-2 stinker to Aldrich Chapman 371 feet to right with two outs, putting the Brewers ahead 6-5. Two of his three home runs came this series, including on Tuesday when he produced Milwaukee's lone run in a 2-1 loss. Guardians 6, Red Sox 4. Jose Ramirez belted his sixth career Grand Slam and had three hits. Will Brennan had a solo homer and host Cleveland beat Bonson. Cleveland had the best record in the American League at 18-7 and matched the second best mark in franchise history through 25 games. The Guardians won their season series against Boston 5-2 and all in 11-day span. Phillies 5, Reds 0. Bryce Harper homered in his return to the lineup following the birth of his third child, and Philadelphia won at Cincinnati for the second shutout in the splitting four-game series. Zach Wheeler allowed one hit in the six innings and a third inning a single by San Diego Espinal. He struck out eight and walked four, extending his scoreless streak to 13 1/3 innings. Twins 6, White Sox 3. Chicago dropped to 3-22, wasting a two-run lead and stretching its losing streak to a season-high 7 in a road loss to Minnesota as Edward Julian hit two of the Twins' five solo home runs. Julian and Jose Mariana homered in a three-run sixth inning off of Michael Socorro. Julian's homered again off John Barreba in the seventh. Carlos Santana and Jose Marina went deep against Steven Wilson's in the eighth. The Cubs 3, Astros 1. Pete Crow Armstrong hit a tie-breaking two-run homer for his first major league hit, and host Chicago swept Houston. Rockies 10, Paredes 9. Elisa Diaz captured Colorado's six-run hit innings with a tie-breaking RBI double as the Rockies relied to beat visiting San Diego. Dodgers 2, Nationals 1. Yoshinobu Yoimoto pitched six shutout innings, and Los Angeles defeated Washington to complete a three-game road sweep. Royals 2, Blue Jays 1, parentheses 5. Salvador Perez hit a two-run homer in a first inning. Cole Reagans held Toronto in check long enough for the rain to arrive. The host Kansas City won a game called after five innings and a long weather day. As 3, Yankee 1. Manson Miller retired Aaron Judge with a runner on his first four-out save, and Oakland won at New York to split a four-game series. Moving on to advice and TV. Ask Amy. Neighbor wonders whether to warn about sex offender. Dear Amy, I have a neighbor who was previously convicted of a sexual offense involving a child. He served time in jail. I don't know the exact circumstance, but I do understand that the term child may include a person as young as an infant and as old as a teenager. The sexual offender is married with two young children. I know that he and his wife want to keep his history private. However, the other neighbors around where I live are not aware of the situation and their kids interact with the sexual offender's family. Do I need to inform the annoying neighbors about his status as a sexual offender, or should I remain silent? I appreciate your advice. Uncertain. Dear Uncertain, you don't say how you know about this offense, but you should take it as a given that these neighbors don't want to know that he's a convicted sexual offender, but this is not up to them. Convicted sexual offenders are assigned a status, level 1, level 2, or 3. Level 1 is considered low risk of reoffense, and level 3 is high risk of reoffense. Each state maintains a sex offender registry. You can check the registry within your zip code to see if your neighbor is registered and what classification is. The reason the registry exists is because people should know if a sex offender lives in community because of the need to protect children from predators. Warning, this virtual scarlet letter is an ongoing consensus of committing a sexual crime against a child. Your neighbor should reveal the offender's conviction, and if he is classified as a low risk, they should reveal that and explain the circumstances. For instance, if he was a 19 and had a sexual relationship with a person under the age of consent in his state, they most likely won't do that. So yes, you should let the parents in your circle know. Dear Amy, I have a weird parenting question. My 4-year-old takes a short nap after school when she comes home from preschool. After her nap yesterday, she came downstairs and her hair had been cut. She denies doing this and is very upset. Her bangs were cut all the way up to her hairline, and one whole side was cut short. I am worried that she would do this. It seems really dangerous and self-harming. She denied doing it when she obviously did, so she's lying. My husband and I are not sure what to do about this. We don't know how worried we should be. Worried parents. Dear Worried, congratulations, you have just passed a near universal rite of passage for parents of 4-year-olds. Children this age seem compelled to cut their hair, and most of them lie about it. It's not self-harming, this is beautifying, and curiosity and a growth awareness of how scissors work. Stay calm and good humor to tell your daughter that hair takes a long time to grow, and now that it is cut, she will have to be patient while it grows back. Tell her that scissors are very sharp and that she needs to ask you if she wants to use them. Take her to the salon or barbershop and have a professional even things out. Your child's preschool teachers are a great source of wisdom. Ask for their advice. Moving on to lifestyles and entertainment. My Pet World. Trainer uses outdated methods. There is a picture of a border collie waiting patiently as a person hands out a treat. Dear Kathy, I recently spent time with a dog trainer on a social level. In these settings, the trainer has commented about how her methods that don't seem comparable with your column or my own experience. The trainer broads and trains their dogs at her facility. She appears to be successful and gets dogs regularly. However, she mentioned pushing a dog's nose into excrement when he wasn't getting it. After several weeks, she said that the dog knows that she is the alpha and that consequences just like kids. Is that true? I had a golden and can't recall giving him a consequence. He just wanted to please us. Do dogs need consequence? Charlie Chicago. Dear Charlie, your instance are correct. With advancements in our understanding of animal behavior and training techniques, pushing a dog's nose into feces is an outdated and inappropriate training method that relies on punishment and dominance-based techniques to train your dog. This approach was used to supposedly teach the dog that eliminating indoors was unacceptable by associating the smell of feces with discomfort or humiliation. However, modern dog trainers and behaviorists have wildly discredited this method, and it is considered ineffective, potentially harmful to the dog's mental well-being, and damaging to the bond between the dog and the owner. Contemporary dog owners advocate positive reinforcement-based methods, which focus on rewarding desired behaviors rather than punishing undesirable ones. Dogs will get it if you provide consistent positive reinforcement, which takes time and patience. Variables are different for every dog. Perhaps this trainer feels the need to move things along more quickly so she can point to some training success that the owner picks up the dog. But training based on punishment or fear can lead to anxiety and behavioral issues in dogs later. Positive reinforcement, on the other hand, involves rewarding desired behaviors with treats, praise, or toys, which help build a strong bond between the owner and the dog while encouraging good behavior. Dogs naturally seek to please their human caretakers, and a positive reinforcement helps establish rules and boundaries without being a bully towards them. So, in your answer to your question, no, dogs don't need consequences. They need a companion who will be patient, predictable, and consistent. Dear Kathy, my miniature schnauzer is 10 years old. She has been flying with me in a carry-on case for 9 years with no problems. My trips are about 2 to 2.5 hours. On the past two trips, about 15 to 20 minutes after takeoff, she got very agitated and started biting the case and did so for about 10 to 15 minutes. It's almost like she's not my dog, that she would stop to sleep in the next 2 hours with no problem. She was fine when we landed, but two different prescribed a sedative, but it doesn't seem to work. Any suggestions? Bernice, New York. Dear Bernice, changes in behavior may indicate a health problem, so talking to your veterinarian first is important to rule out any health problems. If she is healthy, age may be a factor, as older animals can react differently to travel than they did in their younger days. There are things that you can do to help her feel more comfortable during flights. Over-the-counter natural calming aids, such as pheromone sprays, calming collars, and supplements containing ingredients like chamomile or melatonin can reduce her anxiety. Consider getting her anxiety-reducing clothing for the flight, like an anxiety wrap or a thunder shirt, which may make her feel more secure. Next, ensure she gets plenty of exercise before the flight. A tired dog is often more relaxed during travel, and don't feed her a large meal right before the flight. This may contribute to distress, to discomfort, or nausea. Offer a light meal a few hours before the departure instead. Dogs are sensitive to their owner's emotions, so remain calm and offer her reassurance if she becomes anxious. Hopefully, these few tweaks to her travel plans will reduce some of her anxiety on the flight. Kathy M. Residential is an author and a pet expert. Email her at kathy@petpundit.com. Please include your name, city, state. You can follow her at Kathy Monstrel. X etiquette, when step-siblings share the same room. Question. My 12-year-old daughter recently told me her 11-year-old stepbrother tried to kiss her before he went to bed the other night. She was already asleep, and they share a room. We gently confronted him, and he admitted to it, but he was very embarrassed, and my daughter is mortified. My husband and I have only been married 6 months, and we moved into his two-bedroom condo. We obviously need more room, but we felt demonstrating a positive, loving relationship after both of our bad divorces was more important. His son goes back and forth between his mother's home and ours. We aren't sure what to do at this point. What do you suggest? What is good ex etiquette? Answer. Parents in your position have often confided that they were so excited about finding a new compatible partner and how well they got along that they didn't anticipate something like you described. The truth is, you should, and I am glad you asked this question. Yes, it is important to demonstrate a loving relationship, but there is so much more to moving in together than look how well we get along. This is not only your home, but your children's home. They need their individual space and privacy just as you do. People change in their bedrooms or retire to their room and close the door for privacy. Parents see their children as innocent little ones, and it doesn't register that their babies have sexual feelings in adolescence. Plus, many school districts initiate sex education at 5th or 6th grade level, not to mention what kids are exposed to on social media and movies. So now that your 11-year-old and 12-year-old So now that you have an 11-year-old and 12-year-old behind closed doors with limited understanding of what they are feeling and the consequences associated with their actions, that's a huge responsibility with very little preparation. Consider this. If your daughter invited a boy from her class over and they decided to hang out in her bedroom, how much privacy would you allow them? Would you monitor their interaction? When I have posed this question to other parents, their answer is usually, we wouldn't let them hang out in the bedroom. But you have expected your children to share a bedroom. And I'm not pointing this out to parents who have children of the opposite sex. Experimentation is part of life. This does not mean that all will experiment, but it also doesn't guarantee that they won't. And that means bonus families need clear family rules and boundaries set up by their parents to guide children through completely uncharted waters. So what are the alternatives at this point? Make it a priority to find a more appropriate space for your family. I understand finances may be a consideration, but so is your children's comfort. There is always a possibility that your bonus son can stay at his mother's until that happens. However, that will open another can of worms. I'm not sure your husband will not like that, nor will his son for that matter. This perception is in these cases that dad likes you best and none of this would have happened if you weren't around. So you may have to get creative with sleeping space in your home, but stop setting your children up for failure. That's good ex etiquette. TV review. Activism versus a way of life. Documentary Eyes threatens an indigenous Alaskan community. The photo is of an indigenous Alaskan man and woman in front of a very snowy environment with water in the background. In the remote Alaskan village of Gambell on St. Lawrence Island in the Bering Sea, students are allowed 10 excused absences a year for substance activities, primarily hunting. If you don't do substance activities, you die, says the school principal in a documentary, One with the Whale, airing this week on a public television as a part of the Independent Lens. Directed by Peter Kowalski, who credits include the Nat Geo series Life Below Zero, First Alaskans, the environmental journalist Jim Wickens, the film is about many things at once. Climate change, poverty, parents worrying about their teenagers, trying to maintain traditions amid diminishing resources, and allowing an online buying from activists when 16-year-old Chris Ebenoskic successfully hunts his first whale. One with the Whale, many follows the Espinok family, but it allows captures a broader context of life in Gambell, where the population is primarily Yupik indigenous. The numbers fewer than 700. Everything has been flown in, which is expensive. When mom goes shopping for groceries at the Gambell native store, she says they spend $300 to $500 a week on food. She holds up a box of a minute instant rice, $11.29. A six-pack of toilet paper is $13. Fresh produce in a short supply. As a result, more than 80% of their diet comes from substance hunting. A whale can feed the entire village for months. Despite the prevalence of snow everywhere, there is no cars in sight, only four-wheelers and snowmobiles. Out of the water, Chris's father is concerned about the lack of ice. The walrus and the seal migrate with the ice, he says. Without ice, there is no game and there is no food. We learn that internet services come to Gambell fairly recently, but nearly everyone on a camera has a smartphone. In 2017, Chris caught his first whale, and the photos were shared on Facebook. Locally, he was celebrated as a provider, but hundreds of thousands of hateful messages and death threats came pouring in from people outside of the community, primarily followers of Paul Watson, who is known for the reality series Whale Wars. A teacher at Chris's school is aghast, telling a 16-year-old from rural Alaska, where the suicide rates are higher than any other part in the country, to go kill himself is insane. The experience has a visible effect on Chris, who is sweet and goofy but becomes withdrawn and morose. He doesn't want to talk about it with the filmmakers or his mother, and it's unclear if he felt he could talk about his feelings with anyone. This is a consistent outcome with online bullying, with the additional subtext that this close-knit community, new to the downsides of social media, is at a loss. As well, the filmmakers focused specifically on the people of Gambel and do not interview Watson. Chris is just doing something his ancestors have done for thousands of years, says the school principal. It's not like they're going out and pulling hundreds of whales out of the ocean, not like Japan. They're allowed 2 whales per year, according to the Whaling Commission, and this feeds the community. Without the meat in the freezer, he adds, the village could die off. It's complicated. The Esposkoks are a loving family concerned about Chris's well-being, while also dealing with the universal problems around uncertainty and precarity. But the filmmakers leave a certain details are frustratingly vague. What is the texture and rhythm of daily life in Gambel? How do Chris's parents earn money? What jobs are available on the island? Are hunters more guarded when sharing photos? Like any worthwhile documentary, One with the Whale is a window into the lives of others, and it's handled with as much respect and sensitivity as you could expect of filmmakers outside the community. And that brings us to the end of today's reading of the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for April 26th, Friday, 2024. The Nonpareil can be heard each weekday at 5 p.m. I'm Ty Collison from Drake University in Des Moines. Thank you for sharing your time with IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind.